and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Netanyahu tells Biden we have to go into Gaza and rules out negotiations. In turn, Biden says we stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. So it's clear, peace isn't the first priority. What is also on the agenda is potential genocide. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Ritter in Delmar. He's a former intelligence officer and United Nations weapons inspector. In Washington, we have Miko Peled. He is an Israeli-American activist and author. And in Liverpool, we have Trestino Marinello. He is a professor of law at Liverpool John Moores University, as well as a member of the legal team representing Gaza victims before the ICC. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Miko, if I could go to you first in Washington. We know that the Israeli prime minister has been talking with Joe Biden. Joe Biden addressed the nation saying that the United States stands with Israel. He was emphatic about that. Netanyahu has made it very clear that there's going to be no negotiations and that Hamas, as an organization and as individuals, must be destroyed. What is that about? How does this get to a resolution to the conflict? Because none of that does that. Go ahead.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, there's no question negotiations are going to be coming up at some point eventually. If for no other reason than the Palestinian fighters managed to get a great deal of Israelis prisoners now in the Gaza Strip, including senior officers of the IDF. So there's no question that negotiations will be coming up. What Netanyahu wants to do was to keep bombing and killing innocent Palestinians, hoping that will put him in a better negotiating position, and also to exact revenge because he's behaving like a gangster who's been humiliated. Now he's got to take it out on somebody. So he's taking it out on Palestinians in Gaza. The fact that Joe Biden is supporting this, of course, only makes him an accomplice to this massive crime against humanity. This really, everybody's using the term genocide, and I think it's quite appropriate. This wholesale murder of innocent Palestinians in Gaza. And by the way, what's interesting is that they're not stopping the fighters inside, they're going in and out of Gaza continuously, and the fighting is still continuing in some of the Israeli settlements in the south. And so Netanyahu is not going to accomplish anything. At the end of the day, he's going to have to sit with the Palestinians, and he's going to have to come up with some kind of an agreement, or else he's not going to see the prisoners back. And, you know, we know that the prisoners are at the heart of both sides. Both Israelis care about the prisoners that were taken, and Palestinians want their own political prisoners released from jail.
Yeah, but, you know, given the rhetoric that we have right now, I know, people have very high tempers. The temperature is very, very high. I get it. People are wanting that to be the case so they can say the most extreme things. And if you can say the most extreme things, maybe you'll start doing extreme things. So, Scott, I mean, if you look at the rhetoric, coming out of Washington, primarily the Lindsey Grahams and these folks here right now, they want blood, and they're certainly going to get it. It seems like ethnic cleansing is perfectly fine with Washington, because it seems perfectly fine with Tel Aviv. Scott.
Well, first of all, let's understand that Lindsey Graham doesn't speak for Israel. I'm sure the Israelis right now are happy with what he's saying. His words are absolutely, totally meaningless. Israel doesn't need to be goaded on to commit war crimes. They've been committing war crimes against the population of Gaza for decades. They don't need this pompous pompadour perfume princess, egging them on to commit crimes. So I really, with all due respect, don't want to talk about Lindsey Graham.
Well, I mean,
but talk about
but Scott, the point is that the Washington establishment is giving cover for Israel as usual. So it is a continuation of this policy, because we'll talk a little bit about the ICC in this program, but it's the United States that gives Israel cover from when it commits these kind of war crimes. That was my only point. Scott.
No, I understand your point. My point is the United States is so shallow and hypocritical. I mean, on the one hand, I can't say I'd respect them, but at least I'd give a nod to their sincerity if the United States was sincere. All right. But Lindsey Graham right now is choking in the blood lust that he has. But I can guarantee you that in a matter of days, if not weeks, the United States will be demanding that Israel seek a ceasefire, bring an end to this, because we can't stomach the blood that will be shed. And the truth of the matter is, we should be making that demand right now. We don't have what it takes to sit back and let Israel do what it thinks it wants to do in Gaza. Fortunately, Israel can't do it either. I will tell you right now that Israel will lose this war. Now, the Palestinians aren't going to win this war because they're going to be slaughtered. But Israel will not achieve and cannot achieve what it wants to achieve on the ground in Gaza, the destruction of Hamas.
But the slaughter is resolving the so-called Palestine question. And of course, when you look at the tabloids and Western media, they're all for it. I don't know what values they're talking about. I mean, if this is a value, then it's a civilization that is truly sick. Thaddeus Tino, I want to ask you a question in light of the rhetoric that we've heard over the last few days. What has happened to international humanitarian law? I mean, if you given what people are saying and what they're allowing and justifying Israel, then there is no such thing as humanitarian law, at least for the Palestinians. Go ahead, in Liverpool.
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. I mean, first of all, addressing this situation, the current hostilities from international humanitarian law means, first of all, looking at the context in which the hostilities are taking place, the war to Gaza is taking place. And the context itself, for context, I mean, the illegal occupation of both the West Bank and of the Gaza Strip, illegal occupation according to different bodies of the United Nations, in particular Commission of Inquiry of the UN, is itself a violation of international law, in particular of international humanitarian law. So we're talking of a context in which the blockade of the Gaza Strip has already produced a number of catastrophes, a number of crises, humanitarian crisis, health crisis, water crisis, and I could go ahead for quite a long here. This is a context in which there is already a long list of violation of international humanitarian law, extrajudicial killings in the West Bank, the settlements, settlers' violence, arbitrary massive arrest of civilians, use of torture during interrogation or condition or in relation to condition of detention, the illegal wall built up by the Israeli authorities, and destruction of civilian properties. And again, the list is still very long. So this is the context we are talking about. The context itself is already a widespread and systematic attack against the Palestinian civilians, widespread and systematic attack under international law means crimes against humanity.
But it seems like humanitarian international law is only a tool for the enemies of the U.S. It doesn't apply to anywhere else, okay? Miko, if I could go back to you. I want to ask you a provocative question, and I'm not trying to light anyone's hair on fire here, but did Hamas in Gaza Strip really have many options? No one can justify the violence that some of these fighters have committed. They're atrocities, and they should be held account for. But considering the political whims, it looked like that they felt they had no choice to make themselves heard. Miko.
Well, first of all, whether or not the Palestinian fighters committed atrocities, I think is still unclear. I mean, there's a lot of rumors out there. Many of them are being debunked right now. So we really don't know the full scope of what happened.
You're making reference to the beheading of babies, of course. A story that was debunked in the same day that it was spread. Go ahead.
There are several stories like that. So like I say, I'm not going to jump in and say they committed atrocities, because that's not clear yet. Now, look, as we both know, as all of us, I think, here know, Palestinians have been engaged in mostly unarmed resistance for 75 years. I mean, the crime of the establishment of the state of Israel has obviously impacted Palestinians that have been trying to resist it, like I said, mostly with unarmed means. But from time to time, obviously, I think an armed resistance, an armed attack is to be expected, especially when you live in the conditions in the Gaza Strip. And so they have a choice, did not have a choice. Palestinians are killed not only in Gaza and the West Bank, by the way, but in the Nakba, in other parts, throughout all of historic Palestine, whether they stand up and fight or whether they stay in their beds, it makes no difference. They're going to be killed. And we've seen this particularly in Gaza. So, sometimes they prefer to fight, to get up and fight. And what we saw, even according to Israeli military generals and other analysts, what we saw was a brilliant military operation that caught Israel completely off guard. And so did they have a choice? Well, of course not. Israel puts them in a position where they're going to die anyway, so they might as well show up. And it was very clear, it was very, very clear that they had a very clear objective. This was not, and I'll say this clear, this was not an act of terrorism. They had a very clear political objective, which is the release of Palestinian prisoners. And so they knew they were going in to take as many prisoners as they could so that they can then negotiate to free their own Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. And hopefully there's a larger political goal here for the Palestinians, as you know, like I said earlier, negotiations will take place. Of course, it's going to be a while, but when they do take place, hopefully
I'm very skeptical that there's going to be negotiations. I think they see this as an opportunity to resolve the Palestinian questions. And I said, Scott, we have 1 minute before we go to the break. You know, there's about 2.2 million people on the Gaza Strip, and most of them are children. If they're children, that means the only thing they have known is living in a prison camp, a concentration camp. Scott.
I think we should reflect on the words of Moshe Dayan, one of the founders of Israel, when he gave a eulogy to Roy Rutenberg, who was murdered in 1956, a kibbutznik who lived in a kibbutz on the outskirts of Gaza. He didn't blame the Gazans. He blamed Israel. He said that every day that Roy worked, he was stared at with the hate-filled eyes of the Gazans, who looked at him and recognized him and the rest of Israel for what they were, occupiers stealing the land of their forefathers. I mean, the generation of Palestinian youth raising up today are the same as existed in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the early 2000s. It is a cycle that will never end. And I have to disagree with you, Peter. Israel cannot defeat this. Israel doesn't have the capacity to defeat this. The 300,000 reservists don't have the skill set, the tenacity, or the fortitude to defeat this. Gaza will win.
At a huge, huge cost. Gentlemen, we have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Triestino in Liverpool. The Biden administration has gotten most of its allies to mimic the term rules-based order. Is Israel, does rules-based order apply to Israel? Are there any legal entities that can have ever held Israel account for the atrocities that it's committed, particularly against the Palestinian people?
I mean, no, the answer is very simple. No, this is a context which has been historically
characterized. So you're saying this is a political issue. It's not a legal issue. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, it's a legal issue. I mean, because international law is clear. I mean, it imposes a clear obligation on the parties involved, so on Israel as well, and also on third state parties. Every third state party has the obligation, it's not a political choice, it's an obligation to put in place all those instruments provided by international law that can contribute to put an end to the hostilities and to the serious violation of international law. And there are instruments provided by international law in this regard. The problem is that when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian setting, the international community, and I refer here in particular to Western states, do not have the intent. They are willing and maybe unable to implement these international law instruments. That's the reason why I strongly believe that this impunity system, the serious violation of international law, international humanitarian law we are assisting to these days, found a very rich soil in this climate of impunity.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It applies to some and it doesn't apply to other. Obviously, the double standard is there. Miko, let's look at the timing of all of this because, you know, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, made a lot of hay about the Abraham Accords. I've never been very sympathetic towards them because it was giving Israel everything they wanted at no cost, meaning to disappear the Palestinians. Do you think that this Hamas attack was related to that? Because weeks before that Saturday, we were hearing that the Saudis were close to recognizing Israel, and now that's all in tatters. Is this part of the same process? Miko?
Yes, I don't think there are any coincidences here. I think the timing was right. It was also exactly 50 years plus one day since the attacks of the 1973 October War. So, and of course, the results were very similar. You know, Israel was caught off guard, and it was quite catastrophic for Israel. Of course, this is much worse. You know, I want to go back to something that was said earlier. You know, we keep talking about the American allies in the West. I mean, where's BRICS? BRICS is not standing up for Palestine either. All the countries in BRICS have great relations with Netanyahu, great relations with Israel, and nobody's stepping in to support the Palestinian cause, which is why one of the reasons Israel is so capable of doing whatever it wants and maintaining this genocidal approach towards the Palestinians. So this goes far beyond the West. There's a Israel.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I agree.
Israel managed to create alliances with, of course, all the BRICS countries have good relations. They buy weapons from Israel and beyond. In Africa, African countries, Israel has over 40 diplomatic missions in Africa. They are working very hard in Indonesia and Malaysia, even in Pakistan and so forth in order to get normalization. And they're succeeding. The hope is, like you said, that as we heard the Saudi foreign minister say, as a result of this attack by Palestinian fighters, the talks of normalization with Saudi Arabia are now off the table, which is, of course, a very good thing. And hopefully this will get some of the other, at least the obvious allies, like the African countries, the Arab countries, the Muslim countries, to come back to supporting the Palestinian cause, but to support them in a big way, to demand sanctions, to demand, you know, an end to diplomatic immunity to Israel and so on. So, I mean, to apply real pressure to bring down the apartheid regime. One would hope that this would inspire that. We don't know for sure, but of course the Saudi example is a very, very good one. So we've got both that, you know, an attempt to end the normalization talks with this attack, and also to show once again that the myth of the Israeli military, the might of the Israeli military is just a myth, and the might of the Israeli intelligence apparatus, which also showed itself to be completely, completely bankrupt, you know, are both myths. And I think this is a very important lesson that once again, we were taught by a handful of well-trained, well-disciplined Palestinian guerrilla fighters who, by the way, live and train in one of the poorest places on earth, which is the Gaza Strip. So there's some very important lessons here, I think, that we were just taught by the Palestinians.
Yeah. And Scott, let's talk about what victory means, what defeat means. I think that's the only semantic difference between us here. There's obviously talk of this conflict expanding. I'm thinking, of course, of Hezbollah. And you use a phrase, and I've stolen it from you because I really like it, military math. Do you think that Hezbollah, looking at the military math, is deciding which way to go? Because Hezbollah is not the same it was 20 years ago. And then, of course, the Americans, or at least many Americans, blaming Iran for all of this. I mean, the enemies are lining up here. Do you think it's possible this could expand? Go ahead, Scott.
There's an infinite number of possibilities, especially given Israel's well-proven tendency to overreact. But I will say this, I firmly believe that Hezbollah does not want to be involved. Iran does not want to be involved. The scope and scale of what Hamas did was not intended to create a regional conflict. It was to achieve a Palestinian victory. And again, a victory at what cost? It doesn't matter. The Palestinians have been dying for decades. The death and destruction was never going to end. The Hamas is bringing this to a head. They've humiliated the Israeli military, humiliated Netanyahu, humiliated the Israeli intelligence apparatus. All Hamas has to do to win is survive, and they will survive, just like all Hezbollah had to do in 2006 to win was survive. Hezbollah doesn't need to be dragged into this. Iran doesn't need to be dragged into this. The Hamas victory is assured. Unfortunately, as you pointed out, it's going to come at the cost of many, many thousands of innocent Palestinians, civilians, but they were going to die anyways.
Yep.
Either die a physical death or a moral death, stuck in this open-air concentration camp. So Hamas has done them a favor by making their deaths mean something.
Yeah, I'd like to point out to our viewers, I mean, right after the hostilities started, Israel announced a blockade. But that blockade has been in existence since 2007. I mean, they made it advertise it as something new. Let's go back to our guest in Liverpool. One of the Biden administration is kind of whispering that they may, I mean, they agree with Netanyahu, no negotiations. But behind the scenes, they're saying maybe a humanitarian corridor to allow the people of Gaza out. Which is, on the face of it, you know, that sounds like that might be a solution here. But it also means if you were to force the Gazans out, like into Egypt, for example, they would never be able to return. Again, solving the Palestine problem. Is that legal under international law? Go ahead, in Liverpool.
Well, first of all, please allow me before going to this question to, since you introduced double standards before, I was just briefly going to mention that when I was mentioning double standards, I was not referring only to states, so the international community. I was also referring to international organizations, in particular, in this case, to the International Criminal Court. There is an open investigation at the ICC opened by the former prosecutor in the Palestine situation. However, since the new prosecutor took office, the British barrister Karim Khan, in 2021, no significant progress has been done in this situation. The prosecutor in these days has been completely silent in relation to what's happening, despite the policy of the Office of the Prosecutor establishing that the prosecutor can issue so-called preventive statements, like the prosecutor has done in other situations, something like we are monitoring the situation, we can investigate on this serious violation of international humanitarian law. So this silence in this context is shocking. It raises the question whether he is unwilling or unable to say something, even to issue a simple statement of what's happening. In relation to your question on the humanitarian corridor, again, this is not a political choice of states. This is an obligation under international humanitarian law. Preventing humanitarian relief is a serious violation of international humanitarian law and may amount also to a war crime.
Yeah, so but Cristina, when it always comes to the Palestinians, it seems like no one's obligated to do anything. That's the tragedy of all of this here. And let me go back to Mika. We're rapidly running out of time. Do you see a land invasion? Because, you know, we're told on the one hand, you know, they're casualty adverse, but that would be a very heavy casualty event for all sides. Miko.
Israel will not dare put boots on the ground in the Gaza Strip. They learned in 2014 that their fighters are inferior to the Palestinian fighters, and they paid a very heavy price in 2014 for putting boots on the ground in the Gaza Strip, and they don't need to. They've got enough firepower that they can flick from the air and so forth. So they won't dare put boots on the ground in the Gaza Strip. Excuse me. And they're accomplishing their goals anyway. I mean, they're accomplishing their goals they want destruction. And for destruction, you don't need to put boots on the ground. So they don't need to. And even if they needed to, they wouldn't dare. And we've seen this since 2014.
Miko, their stated objective is getting rid of Hamas. So that is a moot point if they're not going to put boots on the ground, unless they want to level every single building and kill every single person. Miko.
That's been their stated objective for a very long time, and it's not working, and it's not going to work this time either. They're not going to get rid of Hamas. They're not going to get rid of Palestinians. They're not going to get rid of any Palestinian particular group, or Hamas or any other group. It's not about that. They make these statements because it's for internal, you know, these statements are made for internal Israeli politics. The Palestinians are still fighting in settlements in the south, settlements around Palestine, I mean, around the Gaza Strip. Fighting is still going on. The fence is still open, and the fighters are still going in and out and bringing recruits.
Okay. I want to give Scott the last 30 seconds. Go, Scott.
Look, I agree with everything Miko just said. Israel has been making a lot of noise. This noise is for domestic political consumption. Netanyahu is a failed leader. He's trying to use this tragedy to, fortify his political stance. This war will end in a disaster for Israel, for the Israeli people, for Palestinian people. It'll be a victory for Hamas.
Okay, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Delmar, and in Liverpool. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.